Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLaughlin. Jay McLaughlin is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLaughlin and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLaughlin stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLaughlin's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLaughlin's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLaughlin. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLaughlin is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital ZIBBY20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLaughlin. Thanks so much.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, and you're listening to Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books.
This episode has been sponsored by Bookhampton. As the premier independent bookstore in the Hamptons, Bookhampton has a highly curated selection of books for readers of all ages, unique one-of-a-kind gifts, and exciting author events. Browse their fabulous staff suggestions online at bookhampton.com. I am honored to be interviewing Anne Lamott today. Anne is a best-selling novelist and essayist. Her book, Bird by Bird, Some Instructions on Writing in Life, is a writing classic. She has written 7 novels and many nonfiction books, including the autobiographical Operating Instructions, an account of her life as a single mom during her son's first year. She also wrote Some Assembly Required, a journal of my son's first son. She has authored many essay collections on faith. Her latest book, her 18th, entitled Almost Everything Notes on Hope, came out on October 16th. She wanted to call it Doomed, but got advice not to do that. She has won a Guggenheim Fellowship and has taught at UC Davis and at writing conferences around the world. She has even been inducted into the California Hall of Fame. She was dubbed the Lefty Guru of Optimism by the New York Times just this week. She currently lives in Marin County. Hi, Anne. How are you?
Hi, fine. Thank you.
Thanks so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. I'm so glad to be here.
Aw. So you are an enormously accomplished and revered, iconic writer, yet you started chapter 6 of Almost Everything Notes on Hope with the following line, "So writing, what a bitch." So I was so surprised by that. So do you really not enjoy it, or you love it, but it's hard? Tell me your thoughts on that.
It's hard. It's hard for everyone. It's hard. I mean, what's the difference is that I've been doing it for so long, for 45 years, that I know it's going to be hard, and I know it's going to go really badly when I start out. And the blessing of knowing that is that I stick with it. But other people that start writing can't believe how hard it is. It really, literally, it's like pulling teeth, and they get discouraged and stop. So it's hard. And then, you know, you have every writer, whether it's a beginner or an old timer, has these built-in critical voices and that tell you it's not going well. And even before you start, they're telling you that it's not going well and that no one is going to be interested and somebody's already done it or whatever, and, you know, that you're beating a dead horse. And so, you know, mining is hard, and being a house cleaner is hard, and writing is a different kind of hard. It can be a mentally exhausting thing to do with your life. But, you know, there's ways to grind that down, and there's ways to just keep doing it and wait for something to take itself off and let you run alongside of it trying to capture it. So that will happen, but you have to sit there through the part where you don't think it's going very well or it's ever going to turn into anything meaningful or that anyone's going to ever be interested in reading it, plus you're a terrible writer. You just have to grind that down by sitting there for and going, yeah, 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 like you talk to a bad roommate.
And you said to writers, you said, write because you have a story to tell, not because you think publishing will make you the person you always wanted to be. There is approximately zero chance of that happening.
Right.
So you say in your book and, you know, in this conversation already, just to write, just the first step is just getting it all on the page and shaping it later. Is that the way you approached this particular book?
I had made a list when I was turning 64 of everything that I thought was true that I could pass on to my grandson who lives here half time and my niece that I wish someone had told me when I was younger, such as that everybody's screwed up on the inside. Everybody is insecure and has a raging, wounded ego and thinks that they need to lose or gain weight or do this or that, or that, you know, the culture just tells you so many lies about yourself. And you're in your family. You came up with these crazy ways of surviving stress or whatever, and that we all have them. And I wanted the kids to know you don't have to compare your insides to other people's outsides, because when you get to know these people who seem so perfect on the outside, it turns out they're just like us. You know, we're all just pretty, it's a human condition. We're sort of afraid, and we're sort of blowhards, and we're sort of controlling. And so I wanted to tell them really what's true about writing, which is that the publishing won't make you well and fill all those Swiss cheese holes inside of you, but the writing will, the being an artist will, the being a co-creator in the world will, and that you have to make yourself do it. You know, I taught writing for years, and people were always explaining to me why they weren't actually writing right then. It usually had to do with having little kids or taking care of their old folks, or that they still had a job, or that they were tired, whatever. And I always said, if you know, they'd say, well, as soon as I move to the Russian River, or as soon as my last kid is out, I said, no, you won't write then either. You know, you either are doing it every day for a little bit, or it's not going to happen. So that's the other things I knew for sure, is that, of course, everything will work again if you unplug it, including you, and that death is really, really not that scary once you get to be 30 or something. It's terrifying when you're young, and then somebody, you see somebody die, and they were cared for and blessed and safe and pain-free, and it still sucked, but that everybody came through. I wanted to tell them things like that, which no one had told me when I was coming up.
Thank you for sharing that with all of us. I mean, I'm a beneficiary of that advice, so I really appreciate it. I'm sure I'm speaking for everybody, but in fact, what you just mentioned, your line, almost anything will work again if you unplug it for a few minutes, including you, you made that an entire chapter, chapter 4, which was great. That's like the best chapter.
It's so important.
I'm like, okay, I read one chapter, now I can go to bed.
Yeah.
And I thought of you this morning when I was unplugging my toaster, which was not working for some reason. So I'm like plugging it back in, and I'm like, now I think I'm supposed to be unplugging. Isn't that what Anne Lamott said?
Right.
So how do you unplug? How do you unplug and recharge yourself?
Well, I go outside a lot. I leave the phone behind if I can. I unplug electronically if I can. I look up. I take a nap every afternoon. I'm really tired. I just love to have a blanket and my dog and to read for a little bit and then close my eyes for 45 minutes. That's my big unplug. And I make myself get away from the TV and from social media. And yeah, I do the same things you do. You know, I get up and I make myself a cup of tea. I go visit people who are really troubled and sad or lonely. I go visit them and I unplug and I sit there and I listen to them. So yeah,
that's
same thing you do.
I love also in the book how you said, don't let others make you feel unsophisticated if you reach middle age preferring Hershey Kisses. And you said that versus
That's
Hershey
right.
Kisses versus dark
That's
chocolate.
That's a whole chapter too.
I know, that was great.
because I think 85% cacao was never intended to be an edible, and that it's supposed to be used for shims if you're somewhere with a wobbly table. It'll have a little 85% chocolate bar. And then people eat it because it's lower carb or because it's supposedly a good diet food or dark. There's dark chocolate. That's like 60%, right? And 65% if it's great dark chocolate. 85% cacao. And some strange alien humans love it, and I accept that about them, but not me. I'm Hershey Kisses all the way and M&M's.
I can't go above 72%. That's my limit on the dark chocolate. You also told a story that a former therapist of yours told. You were starting a new diet ages ago, and you told your therapist, and she said, oh, that's great, honey. How much weight are you trying to gain? Which is such a great reflection on what dieting actually does. What's your current view on dieting and your relationship with your body, basically, at this point?
Well, I really wrote the chapter for my niece, who's 15 and way too big. And, you know, all teenagers think they're defective and unattractive. But I wanted to write it to her because that is a reality, that you think you're unattractive or you need to do this or that to be accepted by the world. But the dieting won't help it in any way. And so, but what will help is a radical self-care and time with your very, very best friend and getting out of yourself to, you know, hook into something much bigger and spacious like nature or your spiritual path besides your thighs and what your thighs are telling you about your worth or what the scale is telling you about your worth as a human being. And 95% of diet, I mean, it's wonderful to be healthy and have exercise and to feed yourself delicious, nourishing food, but a diet is never the answer. And I try it all the time, but it's kind of like a slip. And I tried it for the book tour. I thought, well, I should get a little thin because I'm on stage and this and that. And it didn't work. I mean, first of all, I was still on stage. And I was in room service a lot. And that's never going to be a huge contributor to increase slenderness. And all I could do finally was just this radical self-care and to say to myself, it was like that old Saturday Night Live, you'll look marvelous. And put on clothes that I felt pretty in and eat the healthiest food I could at that meal.
That's great. I love that advice. I keep switching gears here to fit everything in, but you've been sober and off of cigarettes since you were 32 years old. And by 35, you were already a well-regarded novelist with a newborn. In this book, you wrote about your challenges and some of those of your family members along the way. And you wrote, my lifelong and core belief right after the conviction that I was defective, mildly annoying, and better than everyone else was that my help was helpful. So why did you come to the conclusion that your help wasn't helpful? And then what would you tell readers or listeners to do if they're watching a loved one struggle the way you watch your loved ones?
Well, it really is important to say that if it's a young kid, you know, obviously you're in charge of their safety and spiritual and physical nurture. But with a grown child, you know, a child over 18, there's a line in almost everything that help is the sunny side of control. And that I had to look at how much I was trying to control my son after he was 18, how sure I was that my idea of his destiny was a good idea for his destiny and that he should pursue this. It's disrespectful for one thing, and it's useless for another. I mean, they resist and they recoil. And so it was mostly that you stop trying it because it doesn't work. What a concept, right? That you release people, that you release people with love to their own destiny. And if they ask you for advice, you share it. But that to barge onto somebody else's emotional acre and tell them how they ought to be living, A, it's disrespectful. B, it doesn't work. And C, they're going to have to run and hide from you because you're so toxic.
That's probably true. I love that. Barge into someone else's emotional anchor. What a great quote.
Acre.
That's beautiful. So I read that you met your current love interest online, and I was so surprised to hear that. Can you tell me a little about that?
When I was 61, I went on Match at Match.com, and I spent a year with mostly pretty terrible dates, but I learned how to date. I learned what I needed. I learned what I love. You know, I love really highly intelligent conversation. I love long conversations with women about real things like our lives and our families and our bodies and our deepest truth. And I realized with these guys I was meeting, half of whom brought manuscripts or wanted to bring manuscripts, I realized that I was settling for guys that had all these other qualities, but except for this thing I love most, which is to be with somebody who, no matter what the topic is, politics or religion or families or our work or whatever, we're really highly intelligent and sensitive and funny. And so I spent a year learning to date and not finding anyone. Yeah, I had little runs with certain guys, but then I signed on to Our Time, which is for slightly older people, and I eventually saw this guy, and he was handsome. I liked his looks and very intelligent and funny, and I wrote that I liked his profile. It turned out he was very allergic to cats, so I said, well, this will never work because my cat is my life and blah, blah, blah. And then he said, no, if we put brewer's yeast on the cat's kibble, it greatly, greatly reduces my allergies. And I said, no. And I thought, oh, I'm sure he has a manuscript he wants me to read. And then about 3 months later on Our Time, I saw this really intelligent guy, really good looking, nice sense of humor. And I wrote to him, oh, I really like your profile. And he said, you already rejected me. I think it was because I wasn't Jesus-y enough. And I said, no, it was because of the cat. And so we met for coffee, and when he started talking, we were talking about real stuff. We were talking about life and God and literature and movies and our children, and we've been talking all day, every day since. That was 2 years and 3 months ago. And then about a month and a half ago, we were sitting on the couch watching the U.S. Open tennis matches and at night. And he said, can I ask you something? I said, oh, sure, because we're putting in a carport. And so I thought he wanted to talk about the gravel because we had a disagreement about the gravel. I said, oh, sure. And he said, will you marry me? And I said, wait, what? And then he said, no, if you don't want to be married, we can have this life that I love so much. But if you do, I'd love to be married to you. And so then I thought for a minute, I said, okay, can I have a cat? And then turned out he had a ring.
Aww.
And in his pocket. And it was so pretty. It's just so me. It's pink rose, which rose gold, which I really love, and teeny, teeny little diamonds on the band. And so, yeah, so my son, Sam, who has a site called How to Human, a podcast with amazing people, Brené Brown and Gloria Allred and Jack Kornfield and Frank Rich and all these amazing people. His battle cry is, we never give up. That's what in his How to Human podcast, he really talks about how you don't give up in these cold, dark, scary days. And that's my message to people is, I'm 64 now. I will turn 65 3 days before our wedding, and he'll still be 63 because he's 15 months younger than I am. So he'll be 1 year younger in a little while. But so, you know, you just don't give up. You don't give up no matter how long it takes. You don't give up just because it looks so doomed or scary out there. You just keep the faith. You do the radical self-love. You take care of people. You help the poor. You help your cranky uncle. You try to eat as well as you can. You forgive yourself when you don't. And who knows what God's got up her sleeve.
Wow, that's great advice. Thank you for that. You have done so many amazing things. You've written so many books and contributed so much to society and culture and everything. If you could ask listeners to remember just one thing about you, what would it be?
That I really, really love life. I really love it. And I also have found it very hard here. And that everyone I love that has changed and helped me sustain a really high quality of life has found that to be true. That if you find it to be hard, good, come pull up a seat by the table because we're probably really interested in hearing your story. And don't give up no matter what things look like and no matter how long it takes.
That's beautiful. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. And thanks for inspiring me to live a better life.
Good. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
This episode has been sponsored by Bookhampton, bookhampton.com. Thanks to Ryan and Steve at Texture Sound for the audio editing and mixing. Thanks for listening to Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.